Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners, to another week, another guest where I bring on and we just dive into what their lives looks like and who they are. So really seeing where they've came from, where they're going, and what they're doing currently. My name is Mackenzie Tiggs. I also want to remind you that I am a real estate agent in the Boise area. So if you are looking to buy, sell, or invest in real estate, I want you to remember you're more than welcome to reach out to me on my personal Instagram page, MackenzieTiggs_real estate. And let's talk. If it's educating you on what the market is doing or needing help looking, I am your girl. I also have another super exciting announcement that I have a live website now. So if you want to message me, if you want to be able to get on as a guest, you're more than welcome to go to the website. It is rawthoughtspodcast.com. Super simple. You can find all of my social media on there. You can also find all of the episodes and just a little bit more of what this podcast is doing. So furthermore, I have Carter here today, and I'm excited. We just met yesterday, and you're already on the podcast.
We did. Yeah. Yeah. It was funny. It was funny how, like, I got to see you the first time. I told you a little bit about that. I saw your business card just at Pre-Funk, which is over in Nampa, a little beer spot. And I have a habit of stealing business cards wherever I go. But saw the podcast, followed you, and then it ended up being that I was also attending your real estate class because I know Harrison, who you did it with, and yeah. It just came to be. It's kind of funny how it works out that way.
It's super fun to actually hear. You know, I always wonder, like, the business cards that I leave out, like, are they actually going to people? Do they actually get looked at? You know, are people, do they recognize me or not? Some people don't say anything. So it was really cool to actually hear you say, like, oh, I saw your business cards at Pre-Funk. I grabbed one, started following you, and then bam, like, we held a real estate building wealth class and you were there and we got to kind of hear how you, you know, built wealth for yourself so young.
Yeah, it was kind of funny that that came up, but I know maybe I'm a weirdo for taking business cards everywhere, but I don't really care. I mean, that's how you get to meet people. I'm sure you talk about this on your podcast all the time, but if you're not out meeting people and you're in that professional services world, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? You need to have as many people knowing you as possible. So I think it's good that you're putting the business cards out there. Who cares if, you know, they're not going to the right spots, but because they're just burning a hole in your pocket, you know?
Right. So I'd rather them be in a place where people can recognize me. Cause there's also been times where, like, friends that I have known, they'll just take a picture of it and send it to me,
sure.
You know, and they're like, oh, we saw your cards here. I'm like, I'm super excited that you do tell me that you're recognizing it. And it also for myself is a little bit weird because I already know so many people in the Nampa Caldwell area, obviously growing up there. And so seeing them send that to me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, that's crazy. Like, there are people that recognize me. Because even with this, you know, 37 episodes in, 37 weeks of doing this, I don't feel any different of who I am. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't put a chip on my shoulder being out in public. You know, I know there's a lot of influencers that do that. There's a lot of podcast people that do. But, like, that's not what makes me me. Like, me is what makes me me.
Have you told that story of the girl in Nampa that came up to you and asked you, like, or she recognized you and then you asked her for the picture?
I have not told that. I did a little shout out to her two episodes ago, actually. So the story he is talking about is being at an event in Caldwell and she recognized me. Gosh, she had to have been 12, 13, and it was cool. It was cool that, you know, she was nervous coming up to me. And if anybody sees me in public, like, I would want you to come up to me, even if we've never met, be like, hey, I listen to you, or, you know, I recognize you. Like, that makes me so happy because it's showing that this podcast is growing and it is showing that people are listening to it and sharing it. And that also means that the knowledge that the people that I bring on here is also spreading for them.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Hopefully people like what we have to talk about today.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us about Carter.
It's a long story, even though it's been a short life so far. But I grew up. I was actually born in Caldwell, born at the West Valley Medical Center. Yeah, they still have like knob and tube wiring in that old ancient building.
Yep.
But I was born there. My parents were super young when they had me. We were super poor. We lived in those apartments right by that golf course. For people that are listening that don't know, it's just think of like the most rundown apartments you can think of.
Right.
Lived there for a long time. My dad's side of the family is from Nampa, and they've been in Nampa for a super long time. We can talk about, you know, their name a little bit later. My mom is from Florida, and she came up here because her mom got a job up here, and she ended up meeting my dad and having me. So that's why we're up here in Idaho.
How old were they when they had you?
My mom was 18.
Okay.
And my dad was 20, 21.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you are how old?
I am 23 years old.
Wow. You look older than 23. But
I don't know if that's a compliment or a diss, but I'll take it as a compliment.
I think it's just the day and age of like, and also I suck at like guessing people's ages, but just the way that you carry yourself versus some other 23-year-olds.
I appreciate it.
That is a compliment. It is a compliment that you.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So, grew up in Nampa. Went to Owyhee Elementary, if you know that school.
Yep.
Was slated to go to Skyview High School, which is a cool school in Nampa. Ended up not. Ended up moving and going to Mountain View High School in Meridian. That's where I finished out school. Played football there. Had the chance to go on and play college football. Had a couple different options. Visited different schools. Ended up committing to a couple different schools and getting cold feet. And I made the most lame hometown move and went to the College of Idaho, which is located in Caldwell, where I was born.
What other opportunities did you have?
I was seriously considering Portland State. And I was seriously considering a school called Montana Tech, which is in Butte, Montana.
Okay.
If you've ever heard of Butte, Montana, it's an old mining town. Super cool, super cold. I did a couple visits there and got to know the coaches. But on my last visit going there, it was during Snowmageddon, which was like crazy snow for the winter here in Idaho. And it carried over into Montana. And it was -40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, wow.
I took the visit and I just said, there's no way
I
can go there.
You're like, I can't live this lifestyle, let alone, you know, like, I'm sure the football would be great, but if you can't live there, then you can't play football.
No. And academics was another thing. They didn't have as many options as other schools. It was really, do you go into health sciences or do you become an engineer? Those are really the two options. So I committed there. And then I got, you know, a conversation with the coaches at College of Idaho, and, you know, they were able to match my offer, and I had to make the weird decision while I was in Montana to decommit.
Oh, wow.
From that school, and that was an awkward conversation.
I was going to ask, how was that conversation with the coaches? I mean, they think that you're committing to them, and then you're backing out.
So I went on a visit tour. So I visited a few schools. I visited Rocky Mountain College, which is in Billings, Montana. Really cool school. Billings is a really cool town. Just didn't give me the off. They didn't have the money that I needed to go there. It would have been expensive. It wasn't a full ride. And so that was just kind of out, even though it was maybe a really cool place to be. Then I ended up visiting Montana Tech, which I had a great visit at. And then my last visit was up to Carroll College, which is in Helena. And I just basically said, like, coaches, after my last visit, I'll have a decision. And so my college visit at Carroll College didn't go super well. And on the way back, I'm like, I think I'm ready to commit to Montana Tech. So I called that coach at Montana Tech, let him know I would be, you know, committing. And they said, great, we'll even set up some tables, get some media for you to come and sign on your way home. On the way to Idaho, I said, great, let's do it.
Oh, you know, gosh.
We'll get the press there. We'll have dinner. And then I go, okay, got off the phone. And I had been getting recruited by the College of Idaho since I was a sophomore. They were the first school to ever reach out to me. So I got really close with the person that was recruiting me. And I gave him the courtesy of calling him and letting him know, hey, coach, I'm going to be committing to Montana Tech. I really appreciate everything you did for me. You know, it's nothing against you. It's just for my family, we couldn't afford for me to go to college unless it was going to be all the way paid for the most part paid for. And
right.
Montana Tech was, by and large, the best offer. And so he said, well, if it's really that, well, let me talk to coach and see what we can do. And I was really sad I wasn't going to College of Idaho, too, because I wanted to be close to home. And I had friends that were also going to College of Idaho. And so we're just driving down the road. I'm ready to commit to Montana Tech. He calls me back and says, hey, we're going to beat what they're going to give you at Montana Tech if you'll commit to us.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was like, okay, I need to talk to my mom, obviously, just real quick.
I was going
to
say, that's a lot of decision-making at that age, because you're, what, 18, right?
When yeah.
You're making that decision of, like, money and school and moving. You know, that's not only you playing football where you want to, but that's a lot of financial decisions yeah. as well.
At that time, I was 17, I think, now that I remember it. And just not only that, you're in the car. You had the emotions of committing to one school. You're excited to go, you know, meet all these coaches. And your mom's proud of you, and she's crying. And then all this happens, all this business stuff happens, and you're like, I'm also a people pleaser, you know, pushover.
Yeah.
And so that's like heartbreaking to, you know, do that, especially people that have like showed that they want you, making
right.
that decision super hard. And so, you know, we talked about it, and she's like, you know, obviously I want you to be close to me, but I want you to do what's right for you. But I would be pumped if you went to College of Idaho. And her saying that made it easier.
Yeah.
So I called the coaches at Montana Tech and I said, I hate to tell you this, but College of Idaho gave me a great offer, a great opportunity. And obviously, you know, I'm Idaho all the way through, and I need to go there. And they're like, they basically just like an evil boyfriend just hung up on me and I never talked to them again.
Wow.
Yep. Just kept on driving from the freeway, just past Butte, Montana, and went all the way back to Idaho.
They probably had everything getting prepared. I mean, that's a lot of time for them. You know, that's a lot of resources for them.
Yeah,
but
I feel terrible. But I don't know. I never, like, I never considered it when I was, like, that age. You know, because when you're young, you don't know what things cost. You don't know. You don't know, understand like the value of relationships as much as you do when you're older. And I definitely regret doing that now, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah. But still at that same time, I mean, having that relationship, you know, you had built that with the coaches, but still at the end of the day, you have to do what you need to do and what you want to do.
Right.
And, you know, definitely being a people pleaser, that can be hard for us because we are letting them down. But if you hadn't gone to College of Idaho, you probably would have let yourself down and regretted being like, I could be closer to home. You know, I could have exactly what they're offering and not have to move away from what I know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't think I would have been happy out there, and I would have ended up wanting to come back, like you said. And I had watched guys that have played football that were older than me go off to a school and then ended up transferring back to Boise State or College of Idaho or Idaho State to be closer to home. So, yeah. You know, I probably just would have been one of those guys too.
Yeah. Yeah. What position did you play?
I played on the offensive line. If you don't know too much about football, if you're listening, it's the people that protect the quarterback and then open up running lanes for the running back. They're the big dudes, the big sweaty fat dudes with big beards. And
so you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. big sweaty fat dude with a beard. And they move other big sweaty fat dudes that play on the other side, wear a different color. And, you know, they break their hands and their fingers a lot and they get their toes stepped on. And it's they don't score touchdowns. It's not super thankful job. And but it's fun. It's fun beating people up. That's basically what you get to do.
Yeah. How old were you when you got into football?
Seriously, not until high school.
Okay.
I was a basketball kid, believe it or not. I was like long and skinny for the longest time. So growing up, I was always playing basketball. And my uncle is Matt Ballinger. He was a really good basketball player for Skyview. He won Gatorade Player of the Year. he played football as well. He was a quarterback and basketball player. Went up playing at University of Colorado, the Buffs, and I looked up to him, and I always wanted to be a basketball player. Then I got into that situation where I had moved to Meridian, went to Mountain View, played football, played basketball. When I was an eighth grader going into ninth grade, I was 6'3", 180 pounds. So I was like a great looking basketball player. But I also caught the attention of the football coaches. And so I came out for freshman football because, you know, you want to make friends. And, you know, I liked football.
Right.
And it was like an okay year. I didn't like blow anybody away. But that varsity coach that coached offensive line basically said, I don't care what position you played just now. You're playing offensive line in your mind. And you're going to be sitting with me at lunch every day. And we're going to watch football with the varsity team. And you're going to be packing big lunches. Tell your mom you're going to be packing big lunches, and I need you to gain weight for me.
Whoa.
So I went from 180 pounds to my sophomore year, I went to 235, and then my junior year, kept eating, went to 275, and then by my senior year of all that eating and training and lifting, I was 310 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Like double
what basically, you, yeah. only grew 1 inch, so.
Wow. And that was just, I mean, he saw that in you. Like, did he see the passion behind the football? Did he, I mean, in life, some people see that you would be really good at that, but then you don't think, you know, you're like, why am I doing all this? Like, as a kid, you have an adult telling you, eat more food, gain weight, play football for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have to still make that decision to do that.
So I guess what's your question? Like,
I guess my question is, like, how did you really put faith in that coach?
Oh, I think high schooler boys are just really impressionable. And I just, you know, it's like, hey, you want me to do this and I'll play varsity? Great.
And
let's do
and
it.
The people pleaser in you as well, it
yeah.
sounds like.
I was a people pleaser from birth, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, I just did it. I obviously wanted to play college sports. And then as I was getting bigger, I was still playing basketball, but I could not get up the court like I used to. You know, I was not developing as well as I was developing in football. And the varsity coach for the basketball team sat me down after summer basketball season was over. And he's like, you just really can't move like you used to. And you could play for us, but you'll probably be a bench player. And, you know, if you keep getting bigger for football, like, it's just going to be hard for you.
Right.
And then on the flip side, you know, talking to my parents, my grandparents, they're like, if you really want to go on and you're playing this position, you kind of have to choose one or the other. And so sophomore year, I stopped playing basketball, fully committed to football, and just was like, well, I can't go back.
Wow. That's incredible that you started like your freshman year and you ended up playing college.
Yeah. I mean, I played like in the little youth leagues, but that's basically just,
that's like playing tag.
Little kids throwing their heads at each other.
I mean, I played flag football.
Yeah.
I was the tomboy in school that wanted to beat up all the other boys and played football. And then it was the following year that we were going into middle school that it was going into tackle football. Mm-hmm. And I asked my mom, I was like, Mom, can I please play? And she was like, no, you cannot play football. You're not playing football. But it was fun. I loved it. I was such a tomboy, you know, growing up.
Yeah, you probably would have killed me because I was a little wimp back then. until my freshman year, like, I was long and gangly and I couldn't even do a push-up. I remember the first time I could ever do a push-up. It was the summer of my freshman year, so.
That's funny. I will say, one of my buddies, Chance Christine's, when we were growing up, so I've been the same height since sixth grade.
Wow.
And so I was the tall, more developed girl than anybody else. And I would, you know, play football at recess with the boys. And one of my buddies, Chance Kirstein's, I will never forget, he nicknamed me the Beast. And I was like mortified, but at the same time, I was like, yeah, I am. Like, I am a beast. Like, I didn't take it to, like, I wasn't mad about it. I was just like, you know what? That's actually a compliment. Like, I'm glad you think I'm a beast. You're right. I am one.
Yeah. I mean, you're embarrassing them or else they wouldn't call you that.
Yeah. And now, like, just seeing him now develop too, like, he's like, I mean, he's bigger than you. He's taller than you. And then there's just like me. And I'm like, how in the hell was I bigger than you at one point in life? Yeah. Like, it's insane to see. But it's cool. I mean, that's super neat that that progression happened, you know, for other younger kids. Because I think parents think that, you know, oh, if my kid's going to go to college ball, they need to be, you know, in peewee and they need to be doing this and that. It's like, if your dedication is there and your passion is there, like, you can make it happen.
Yeah. Also helps to have a dad that's 6'5", but, you know.
I mean, you have the genetics for sure. How was it, I mean, sitting down and learning? Like, you had to really learn the game of football with that coach.
Oh, yeah. It felt impossible. I really still don't feel like I know football. And I coach right now, and I still don't feel like I know it. You know, there's people that played football. You know, they've worked around football after college. They've coached. And they don't even get their first head coaching job until they're 50.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things where there's so much strategy that goes into playing that game, where if you aren't obsessed with it, you'll get by, but there are people that are elite that will crush you. And so I can really thank that coach. His name is John Taylor. He still coaches at Mountain View. He's an awesome guy. I don't know what, if he believed in me for whatever reason, but he just force fed football down my throat and would not let me quit. You know, I had a bad attitude. I'm an only child also, so I was a little dirtbag when it came to, you know, respect and authority and, you know, not being lazy, not taking the easy route. And he just willed me into, you know, something that was presentable. And so I can credit him a lot for, like, helping me become a man and also a good football player. But you really just have to put, you know, every day you're working on it, either getting stronger, watching other people play, and then also, like, writing down the plays, literally, like, yeah. Notebooks and notebooks and notebooks full.
How do you remember all those plays?
You simplify it, and then the cool thing about football is you come up with your own language. So you come up with, like, little dummy words that tell you what the play is. So when I say the word, like, cougar, I know what I'm supposed to be doing on the word cougar. So when we're playing in a game, you know, we'll be running up to the line and the quarterback will go cougar, cougar, cougar. And I just know after writing it down 50 million times and watching somebody that's older than me do that same play, I need to go there. So switching teams was really hard. And that's where I really can, like, think it's impressive, like, for NFL football players that get traded to teams every year and they're learning new plays. I had to only think of one team's plays for 4 years. It was a lot easier.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, you just – and it's kind of like playing an instrument. You know, once you become a master at one instrument, then you can switch to another. It's a little bit easier. Or learning languages.
Right.
It's just one of those things where, like, you build that base where it's really impossible to learn. And then by the time you're, like, 4 years into it and you're, like, 18, you kind of have it down.
Yeah. Well, and especially, like you said, you are – eating, breathing football. Like, that is what you're doing. And that's almost your, you know, that's almost your job at that point when you're going for a full ride into it. Like, your money is also on the line.
Money's on the line. Yeah. You're not, like, I've always thought, like, I'm not going to school unless I play football. I'm going to go be an electrician or something like that. And I am not good at that. I'm not a manual labor guy. So I had to make it work or else I'd be screwed, you know, because my parents weren't together. It was just my mom, really, that who I was living with at the time. And we didn't, like, have the income to, like, send me to college or anything, you know. Or if anything, it was going to be community college. And then I probably wouldn't have been as motivated to keep going on. And I just don't know where my life would have been. So it's backs against the wall.
Yeah.
Got to go for it. And I wish I would have went harder, to be honest.
Yeah. How was it juggling football and your academics?
Oh, that could be a whole podcast on its own. I mean, yeah, it's a full-time job. Like, I've never been hit with such a wall of, like, responsibility than being a freshman in college playing football and going to a hard school. Because I don't know how much you know about College of Idaho, but they've got a reputation for being, like, pretty academic, and
right,
that reputation holds up. Like, you can't just go to class, be able to fog up the mirror and get by. Like, those professors are going to challenge you like crazy, especially because average class size is like 20 people.
Wow.
So they know you.
Yeah, they're small.
Yeah, even the freshman level classes were about that big. And I had some classes where it was like me, the professor, and like seven other people.
Wow.
When I got into the higher level. So they will know.
Yeah.
If you're slacking.
Yeah. And they have, I mean, but that also probably shows for that college why their academics are so high, because their classes are a lot smaller and a lot more intimate and can actually, you know, they can actually teach you mm-hmm. versus like when I went to BSU and there's 200 people in our class. I don't even know how many were in the class. You're just another number.
Yeah. There's almost no memorization work or anything. You've got one-on-one with the professor all the time, which was awesome about going there. But when it comes to like the time management and being an athlete and a student, I'll just kind of walk you through a day. So you wake up at 5 to be at the lift by 5:30 or 6. It was just depending on the year. We had 5:30 lifts or 6 a.m. lifts. Then you get done with that. You shower. You have to go to breakfast before your class, if you can make it to breakfast before your first class. Hopefully you were smart enough with your schedule that you baked in some time. Then you go to 2 classes, and then you grab a quick lunch, because then you have your lunch meeting where you go into the football building and you watch film on yesterday's practice. And then you go back for 2 more classes, and then you have to go into the training room before practice and get whatever treatment, whatever ailment you have at the time, done with the trainer. So whether that's putting heat on your back, you know, rolling out your calves because you get cramps, or, you know, stretching beforehand, you know, getting cupping on your thighs or your back. You're doing that, which could take an hour depending on what you have to do. So you have to bake that time in, and then you have to put on all your stuff before practice. And then our football building wasn't near the stadium. So then you have to get in your car with all of your stuff on and your bag and your helmet, and then drive over to the stadium. And then you go and you practice for like 2.5 hours, and then coach talks for another 30 minutes because he has a million things to say afterwards. And then you have to rush over to the football facility again, put all your pads in the locker room, put them on the, you know, laundry loop so that the equipment managers can get them washed for you for the next day, or else you're going to be screwed and stinky. Showering, and then hopefully having enough time by then to get to the cafeteria before it closes, because we would oftentimes get into the locker room by like 7:20, 7:30, and the cafeteria would close at 8.
Oh, okay.
So you'd have to like shower and run over to the cafeteria, and you probably get there with like 10 minutes left.
Wow.
And then you have to go, if you're a freshman, you for the first semester have to go to your studying after that from 9 to 10. It's like monitored studying. And then you don't get anything done during that. So then you have to really study from 10 to 12, and then you're back up at 5:30 for the next one.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's pretty tough. And that's just a normal day, like not including studying or like game travel, because if you're traveling for a game, you're missing all of that school, but you still have to make it up.
Right.
It's just really stressful. And then, I mean, you didn't think about, I mean, I didn't mention working, did I?
No.
So if you're not on a full scholarship, which there's a lot of guys that aren't, or you need to have money for doing anything, there's no time for that.
Right.
So you're the poorest you've ever been. You're the most stressed out you've ever been. You're the hungriest you've ever been. You're like the most sleep deprived you've ever been. So it's really not for the weak.
No. I mean, even just, it gives me a lot more credit, you know, when they're like, oh, you're just a dumb old football player. And it's like, hearing how much work goes into that, to just, you know, juggling even just your schedule, you know, with waking up and doing the gym and going to classes. And hell, I would go to a class and I would go home and take a nap. And then I'm like, okay, now back up for lunch and go to another one. Oh, another nap. Like, I was the worst college student. I couldn't even fathom like the schedule that you had, the pressure you had academically and for your, you know, for football. How did you manage really taking care of yourself in that?
You don't. You don't. There would be months you would just go without basic hygiene, like shaving. Like, if you see a football player, like, 3-4 months into the season, they've got a beard all the way down their neck. you know, they don't have a haircut. They're just wearing sweats and a hoodie and like comfy shoes because that's literally all they can do. Really, the only thing that I can remember doing to take care of myself was like setting aside a little bit of time to take a nap on Sunday. That's about it. That nap was so sweet. Other than that, not much. That's why you see like male athletes especially like developing nicotine addiction, you know, drinking heavily, because the only stress relief is really like the unhealthy stuff.
Yeah. Being that busy and being close to your family, did you see them? I mean, that doesn't sound like you even have time to see your family.
No. Yeah. I really never saw my family, funny enough. I would only see them after games. And then we would maybe go get dinner. And that was it.
Wow.
That was really the only time. Yeah. So phone call, maybe, a couple Snapchats. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy that, you know, you stayed here because of, you know, you being from here and your family and being close with them, but yet you still didn't get to really see them.
No, but I couldn't even imagine not being there, because even seeing them for a little bit was awesome. Knowing that they're at your game is awesome. And then also, like, you know, not being able to have a job, like, they're there. They'll bring you, like, paper towels. They'll bring you paper plates. They'll bring you some snacks. Like.
And did you live on campus? Do you have to live on campus for...
Yeah, CFI, you have to live on campus till you're 21.
Whoa.
Unless you can write a convincing essay that you deserve to be off or you get married.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so private schools are weird like that. A lot of them do that. And I got off after my second year, but the first 2 years I stayed on campus completely. Yeah.
How did you get off your...
I wrote some... I don't know if this is going to get me for fraud now, but...
Well, you don't have to say it if it's going to get you in trouble, but you already did spill the beans.
No, I basically just wrote a letter saying, like, it's, you know, it just doesn't make sense for me to live in the dorms and I need to live somewhere else. And I found a better situation and I need to move back in with my parents or something like that. And they let me off.
Did you actually move back into your...
No, like
your...
no, I didn't. But it worked. So, you know, College of Idaho housing, I'm sorry, but...
But I feel like, I mean, especially when you're from here, I mean, I do think it's important to distance yourself, you know, a little bit from eating, sleeping, breathing the college.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, even if it's just driving, you know, instead of walking to your dorm, you at least get to drive and see the community a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets a little bit of a break from all college.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah, I mean, the first 2 years, I really didn't come off campus. Life got a little bit better as I, you know, got older at the school. I got some injuries, so I was able to, like, I wasn't playing. So I had some, like, when they were gone, I had off weekends. And then during the last year, COVID hit, and so we didn't play at all. And that was, like, literally, I hate to say it, but that was the best year of college.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Just had so much free time. You know, I felt like I was like a, you know, full-time job for being in football. And, you know, it was great. But then it was like such a joke. Like, I wish I could just be a regular person, you know, just for a day. And so when COVID happened and we had to go home and school was online, my life kind of got better because I didn't have to be in class stressing out about that. I was at home, you know, in my, you know, college house, and we weren't worrying about practice at the time. And we just had so much more time to ourselves. I was able to work and I had money, and I was like, this is what the regular world's like. I don't want to go back. And, we had, the chance to come back and play. I actually stood up in front of the offensive line. I was like, guys, I don't want to come back. So I finished out my last semester just as a regular student. And my coach, Mike Morosky, was so gracious enough. And the athletic director, Regan Rossi, was, you know, so cool enough that they carried on my scholarship for me.
Wow.
To let me finish. So I'm really thankful for that.
But oh my gosh.
I got to reclaim my life back a little bit. And I'm really happy I did.
Yeah. Did anybody else not decide to come back too?
I think a lot. I think I can't remember, but I'd say probably 10 or 12, you know.
And that, I mean, that's a big impact on a team.
Yeah. Seeing a class all the way through is almost impossible. And what I mean by class is like the class of 2017. We recruited 53 guys that had came to the school. And I, by the time that we were seniors, I think only 8 were left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if you can get, you know, 80% of the people that you brought in to finish out, that's going to be a really special team. So getting through college as an athlete is really not like a easy thing to do. And so I was just one of those people that couldn't make it all the way through.
That's incredible. And especially, I mean, it makes sense now hearing the schedules and hearing the pressure and hearing the stress that comes on with doing both of those, why so many people don't make it all the way through, you know, and then life happens. Like, you can't forget that regular life is also happening while you're doing all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, and you know, it's hard enough to get all the way through, but even like that's without your mom being sick or your dad, you know, losing his job and your parents getting a divorce. Like, there's so many things that could happen where it's like, you, when you're there, it's kind of, it is kind of like regretful now to say, especially since I ended up quitting at the end. But when guys would quit, you know, during those first 3 years, I'm like, oh, they're not tough. Oh, they're wimpy. You know, they don't care. But it's like, you know, when you think about it from their spot, it's like, hey, my mom just died. I really don't give a shit about football right now.
Right.
So I don't know where I was going with that, but I just.
But I think it's, I think you were going in the aspect where even though, you know, the money is on the line and your, you know, kind of reputation on the football team is there and that is what you signed up to do, nobody likes quitting, and especially big, burly men like you. You know, nobody likes to quit, but there's also other important things in life. You know, yeah. And that could be distracting, or, you know, how can you practice good when you know your mom's dying?
Mm-hmm.
Or how can you practice good when your parents are getting divorced and you have siblings at home that need to be taken care of? That is where I think the priority can sit and I think really take on, you know, you see from the outside of like, oh, well, they're just a wimp. They're quitting. But it's like, how many people do you not know their story, yep. Right?
And it really, that mindset shift really changes everything for you, because once that happened, I was like, you know, oh, I'm making money. I'm feeling better. I'm happy. Like, my conversations with people are more enjoyable. I'm feeling more confident. I have more energy. I think this is the right thing. I'm choosing me. I'm letting people down. But now I'm so much happier. And then I kind of was like, what other things can we apply this to? So I was doing door-to-door sales and working at Albertson's Slicing Deli Meat. And then once I, you know, made my first few sales, because I went 6 months without making a single sale.
Wow.
And it was solar. So,
okay.
Yeah, tough. Yeah. Especially here in Idaho.
Here in Idaho, it's incredibly hard.
Yeah. So I was doing that, and I was, you know, cutting meat at Albertson's. And I realized, after one check of a sale from solar was 1,000 hours of work at Albertson's, I was like, what am I doing? I got to start betting on myself more. And that is like, that was so eye-opening to me, where why am I doing all these things and putting so much time into, you know, working for other people or doing things just because I feel like it's the right thing to do, whether that's, you know, killing yourself at practice or killing yourself at some obligation you don't necessarily like being at, or killing yourself at a job where if you are now betting on yourself and doing the things that like you want to do, after the tough period, it's going to come out positive.
Right.
So that whole transaction just kind of made me feel way more confident about what I was doing. And that's how I look at a lot of stuff now, of like, what what, like, where am I going with these obligations, and are they really good for me? And that maybe is selfish, but I feel like at my age and what I'm trying to do, you have to be a little bit selfish. There's like a cliche saying of, you always got to take care of number one first. I don't know if you heard of that before, but
yeah.
That last year of college was really eye-opening for me. Just like, hey, now's the time to start taking care of number one. So I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's a term that a lot of people wish that they could abide by a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel obligated to other people. We are people pleasers. You know, we feel like, oh, they need us.
Yeah, 100%.
In reality, we need ourselves much more than the other people do. You know, I was actually listening to a first responder podcast earlier today, and, you know, they had talked about, you know, really taking care of ourselves first. And it's not selfish. You know, if we really aren't taking care of us, then who is? And if, you know, and so many people, if you don't take care of yourself, how are you taking care of other people? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just this kind of surface level, nonchalant, non-genuine, non-from the heart, because it's just transactional.
Mm-hmm. What I've noticed is, like, looking back, right, because people always say hindsight's 20/20, now the vision's clear. When you're doing stuff that's making you miserable, you may be really good at being that one thing, but I realized, like, I was a bad boyfriend. I was not a great student, you know? I was, like, a good student, but I wasn't, like, actually learning. I was just getting by. I didn't take care of myself. My weight was bad. My hygiene was bad. Didn't look presentable, you know? But then you start taking that away, right? And then you're like, oh, I'm a good boyfriend now. Like, my relationships are getting better. My interactions with my parents are better. My friendships are growing, you know, because when you're miserable, the last thing you want to do is maintain this group of friends or, you know, small friendships that you have. But when you're happy, it's like you're so much more willing to go out. Mm-hmm. You're so much more willing to call those people. You're so much, everything about your life is better when you cut out those things that are making you miserable.
Right.
I don't know if you agree.
No, I absolutely agree, because I think it's when you're surrounded by toxicity, it just weighs you down and it just brings you down. And when you break away from those and you can really see the light of things, it's like, oh gosh, like, why am I not happy? You know? And it does take a lot of self-talk and self-realization of what is making me be a bad boyfriend, a bad girlfriend, what is making me snap? What is making me, you know, kind of get triggered? Is it my job? Is it the relationship? Is it something else? Is it, I don't really want to do this, but I have to do this? And I think one of the best things that I have learned to stay in a positive aspect, because sometimes you can't fully take out the toxicity around you.
Sure.
Is gratitude. Like, God, how lucky am I, right? Like,
right.
How lucky am I? And it could be the smallest things. Like, how lucky am I that I got to wake up today and I got to get dressed in good clothes and I drove, I had gas in my car?
It's just like what you told me yesterday at the class was, you know, you're like, hey, how lucky am I that my job is meeting people and putting on events where they can learn from me and then we can also go have fun.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very unique job, and it's cool that you took time to appreciate it.
Yeah.
I still have trouble, like, pulling my head out of the sand every once in a while and, like, taking a step back. And I think everybody goes through that from time to time, of just being stressed out and buried by the stress. But that's such a great point of, yeah, you know, when I look at the full picture, my life is okay, you mm-hmm. know, as long as I'm putting myself in the best position I can be in. Then, all right, let's go.
Right. And I think if you're making progression, I mean, we get into ruts, you know. I definitely definitely can get into my own, you know, depression cycles. And, you know, it has to be, what am I doing to make myself better? Or what am I doing to get myself out of this situation? What am I doing to move myself out of where I am? Because where I am is not a good place. And even if it's a teeny tiny little step, you know, you had talked about like your hygiene and the football players, if they're in sweats, like good on them. At least they got clean clothes for the day. Yeah. Right. And that's sometimes when people are in really low lows, if they can at least get up and brush their teeth, like good on them. Like that is what they could manage to do that day. And maybe the day before they couldn't manage any of that. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, you know, being in those dark places or really reflecting on your life and being like, you know, I am very grateful. I think especially in our modern world, we can look past a lot of that because everything's so convenient. It's convenient to have all of these things. We get distracted by how many items or, you know, how many just things we have that we don't really need to live. But yet we have people in third world countries that are honestly happier than people in the US and they have nothing.
Yeah. And it's just the way that they're looking at it.
It's totally the perspective. It's totally the, you know, outlook. And I'm guilty of not doing that perfectly or not doing that great sometimes, you know, but then that's when you surround yourself with people and they help you pull you out of that. Or they recognize, you know, the people that you're around. Hey, I haven't talked to you in a while. Are you doing okay? Actually, no, I'm not doing okay. Thank you for asking.
It's super hard. Super hard to do that, you know.
It's extremely hard. Like, if it was easy, then a lot of us wouldn't be in these dark places, yeah. You know?
Let's talk about, like, the people that are working for themselves, you know, maybe full-time commission or just starting out. Like, that is maybe one of the scariest parts that you can be in your life. Want to hear about, like, what you do when you talk to people. Because you just kind of got past it, right? And you're, you know, you never feel like you're crawling out of it. But the way I describe career-wise going out on your own and, like, betting on yourself, essentially, is you'll have good days, and then oftentimes you'll find yourself, I don't know if you'll agree, but going to bed with that knot in your stomach of just like intense pressure of, will I succeed? Will I not succeed?
Yeah. It's going to make me tear up actually, because I've never been asked that. And it is very, very, very heavy on, I think, my heart, especially, you know, leaving the team that I did for real estate and betting on myself because I wanted a better relationship with the team that I, you know, work with. And I wanted a better environment and I wanted more time that I could sell real estate. I could connect with my people, but I also could spend time with my podcast. And recently, actually, just the beginning of this week, I will be starting a second series to the podcast. And it'll actually be exclusive to only first responders. So if I do have any first responders listening right now, I want you to reach out to me because it's going to be talking about heavy situations. It's going to be talking about a lot of mental health, but it's going to be exclusive to Mindbase app. So they came on to Raw Thoughts podcast. We talked about it. I have partnered with them where I will actually be doing exactly what I do for Raw Thoughts, but with first responders, and it will go onto their platform. It's not going to be going out to the public because we want it to keep it kind of confidential within the first responders, also helping them feel like they are safe in a safe place, talking about very vulnerable stories. And don't want to kind of break that. We want to keep a trust with them. So here I am trying to sell real estate. Mm-hmm. Just switched my teams, right? Here I am. Every penny of this podcast has been mine. And now I'm starting a second series. You talk about money getting gone and gone and gone and gone and not knowing when that next paycheck is. That's hard.
Not in the stomach, big time.
It's freaking hard. And like, I think it's hard because, you know, people always say like, oh, well, we're here and we can help you. But I'm also a person that I don't like asking, you know, a lot of us don't like one asking for help, and not only help, but when it comes to finances too, you know. And then you get people that just absolutely love the podcast and tell me, if you do anything, don't stop that. If you do, you know, if you have to give up something, don't give up the podcast. And I definitely wholeheartedly believe in that. One of my very, very first kind of slogans or kind of motivations and betting on myself is I've always told myself that I wanted to be the little Joe Rogan of Boise. And I have it on a sticky note. I look at it repeatedly. I have said it to numerous people because I think if you are telling other people about it, you are putting it out into the universe. You're also taking the steps. It's an accountability when people check in with you again. And so it's extremely hard to bet on yourself. But the biggest thing that I look back on is how many other people have been in my position where it's really hard, but they kept going. And look at how successful they are. You know, the most successful people, you hear their stories, and it's not like that happened overnight.
Yeah.
And I can't expect that for me either. And so all I can do is wake up every day and connect with people and talk with people. And it is my job, but I don't know when I'm going to get paid next. And yeah, that's the reality.
That's the hardest part.
That's the hardest part.
And it's like, it's almost like it's the hardest when you're starting out too, because in the real estate industry specifically, is like the perception is, oh, there's a million realtors. They're fine. They don't need me. I don't want to work with you. Realtors are worthless. Like it's that bad sometimes, mm-hmm, what people say. Same with insurance.
Right.
Insurance sucks. You know, you're the worst. Like, you take all my money. You know, you should be able to help me. But also, you're new. I don't want to work with you.
Yeah. I mean, and I think for myself, too, is because I have that personality where I absolutely love that I've had numerous jobs. I've had a lot of life experience. But then that also comes into, you know, the validity of what I'm doing. You know, people are like, well, how is it that you're brand new in real estate and we should go with you versus somebody that's been in the industry for 22 years? Mm-hmm. And you have to promote yourself. Like, I am now a brand for myself, not only my podcast, but real estate, you know? Yep. Just like you seeing my business cards in Prefunk, well, you know, I am a billboard everywhere I walk now.
Right.
And I have to be cognizant of that. And I have to be reputable for that, because I don't want somebody, you know, and you can't please everybody and you'll always upset someone. But I strive to be a good person. And if they recognize me, you know, that I'm doing something good and not something bad.
What do you do when you are asking them, or when you're meeting with people that you want to work with? I mean, how do you tell them, like, hey, I'm the one, you know?
It's a little bit different, I would say, because I have just transitioned. A lot of people that I'm working with right now, or like that were at the event last night, they're people I know, that are my friends, that are my family. And so they can trust in that. I haven't had the situation yet where people, you know, will ask. That has been a lot of my importance of being on a team.
Yeah.
Is because I can rely on them. I can fall back on them for the education, for the experience, and letting the people know, you know, hey, I may not know the answer, but I have a whole team behind me that does. And I have a whole team behind me that is going to help support, you know, what we need to do for this transaction. And I think it really, you know, comes down to who I am as a person. And if they don't want to work with me, then I don't want to work with them, and I'm not going to force them.
Sure.
And if they feel more comfortable with somebody that's been in the industry for 5 years versus 2 years, Well, guess what? There's a lot of people that have been in the industry for 5 years, but they've done two transactions. So is it the years that make it? Is it the experience that makes it? You really just have to sell yourself. And that, I think, is the continuous thing where, you know, the event last night, just being, you know, I had my sister there. She's like, holy cow, like, you do know a lot. And it's like, I do ingrain myself. If I want to be the expert, I have to teach myself. I have to do the research. I have to continue to learn myself so that when I do get asked those questions, I don't look like an idiot, you know? And I think that is the difference of a lot of people of, you know, just kind of being in the industry, or what are you doing to set yourself aside, you know? Especially in real estate, one of the things that I started very, very, very early on was looking at a weekly basis of our market dynamics, pulling numbers. How many new homes hit the market? How many sold? How many went pending? What were those price changes? Because then when I'm talking to people about the industry, I'm actually giving them hard facts and current facts that I pulled and that correlates with our area.
That's good. I think with insurance, you deal with it a lot, especially being young, 23. It's a battle when you're dealing with people that, you know, don't necessarily already even want to talk about insurance, although they may have been buying insurance for 20 years if they own a company like in construction, or definitely need the help, right? Because there's a lot of people that have bad insurance. And so it's already an uncomfortable topic, especially like people don't want to talk about things that, you know, what will go wrong or what could go wrong. And that's all insurance is talking about. And they really don't want to talk about it with somebody that they seem or they deem like unworthy of their attention. And sometimes you get that little rag when you're young.
How do you combat that?
What I do, especially with my commercial clients, is I tell them like, hey, you can go with, you know, this company that is, you know, down the road, and yeah, they've been doing it for this long. This agent's been, you know, an agent for 25 years, but you're going to come to find out that you're just going to be a client to him because insurance is a little bit more transactional because the commissions are lower. You don't get to know your client as well unless you make it a point. But for me, I've been in it for almost 2 years. I know like what needs to be done, but the difference is they're going to be a client for you. For me, you're a $1 million client. And then that usually,
yeah,
I just go, wow, like the companies aren't different, right? Because there's only so many insurance companies that each independent broker has access to.
Yeah.
So do you want somebody that is going to be super excited when you're reaching out for help on service? Or do you want somebody that's going to be like, oh, you know, we'll get to you next week. Mm-hmm. You're one of 10,000 people.
Right.
And you find that with a lot of the big companies in Boise, they do business with like huge insurance conglomerates that are in Boise that are like, you know, 100 agents deep, 200 agents deep. That agent, although may control $50 million worth of insurance business, he's not touching any of it. But, you know, you go with somebody that's maybe not been there as long but is knowledgeable. I mean, they're looking at the account, right?
Right.
And if you're a business owner, do you want to just be in a pool? Or if this person that maybe is not as rich as your current agent, or not as flashy or not as inaccessible, so it seems like it's cool to work with that agent, if they have access to all the same companies, why don't you go with somebody who's going to really care about making sure you're getting everything that you need?
Right.
And when you have that conversation with somebody that you really want to work with, if they're reasonable, that'll make a lot of sense to them.
Yeah. I mean, and I definitely give you props because, you know, last night while we were there, you had said, you know, are you tied to this place? Do you, you know, would you go somewhere else for these events? I have somebody that I insure, you know, that we have a different place to be able to hold these events. And so for you, promoting your clients is helping them promote you at the same time.
Yeah. That's actually all credit to Uncle Mike. So Uncle Mike is a really grumpy old guy. You'll have to go into the office to get to know him. he made a really good point of we need to take care of the people that want to do business with us. We have so many clients because we've been around for so long that how rude to not do business with the people that are actively doing business with you. And some that have even been doing business with us before any of us were born, right?
How long has Ballinger Insurance been around?
I say 70 years, but I think officially it's 68.
Gotcha.
68 years in Nampa, so 1954, I think that's right.
Okay, yeah.
Long time. So, like, we've had people come in. It's been kind of mind-blowing where they're like, I've had you guys since I was 16, and those people are now 80.
Wow.
You know? And it's like bringing it back to, you know, taking care of people that do business with us. It's like Mike made the rule of if we can't help it or if we can help it, you got to go do business with people that are with us. So we really only eat at restaurants that we insure unless we can't help it. You know, we only shop at places that, you know, do business with, whether that's like a furniture store, clothes store. We have all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Got to go there.
Right. Do you, I mean, even if it's not you, but it's the company, how do you know who you guys are insuring to be able to ensure that you're going to those places and supporting them?
Well, the cool thing about us is we're so accessible and we have a spot. People know where we are. So a lot of times the business owners that, you know, we really want to support are meeting with us. They're coming down to the office saying, what's up? You know, whether to talk insurance just for their annual review, or they're coming by to say hi, you know. I've got companies that I've worked with that have just, like, dropped off cookies for, you know, me. And I'm like, I'm taking your money. What's up? Like,
yeah.
Why are you bringing me cookies? But we know where the notable companies are because we see every single policy that goes through the door. There is no automation. Every single policy that we've ever written is touched by us. So we're like, oh, this and that. I'll see a last name and I'll be like, oh, they own that company. Same thing as driving by. Like when I'm with my friends, I'll be like, we insure them. I have this funny thing where like, it's so weird, but like we'll drive by and I will flip off insurance companies and then I will wave at the companies that we insure. It's just so stupid, but I love doing it. It's like slug bug, you know?
So, oh my god!
So whenever you drive by Allstate, I'll flip off the Allstate.
Oh my god!
It's rude, but it's like a fun little like rivalry thing, but.
Well, and it's kind of like you're flipping off the people that are using it also, but also like supporting the people that are using you, you know? And it's not necessarily that they're wrong, but it's like maybe they don't know how you guys do business, or you know, it's that big flashy name that they see and get behind, and then they think it's quick and easy. But I think it really goes down to, you know, and I really have learned this in real estate, is the relationships. The relationships between people is so much more important than that transactional. You know, I have a lot of lenders, I have a lot of title people, I've never done deals with them. But they'll be the first ones to give me a call and be like, hey, we're down at such and such getting drinks. Want to come by?
Mm-hmm.
And it is that rapport. It is that connection. It is that just, I think it really comes down or really kind of comes back to the olden days where it's like, I actually know you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, we're friends on Facebook and Instagram, but like, I know who you are.
Yeah.
And I can call them and I can say, hey, like, this is what's going on. And we can just check in. And you know, I love being able to have that. And it's crazy because growing up, I didn't, you know, like, I feel like I was always in school or doing this or working and like didn't have, I've never had that really big, strong, like friend group or girlfriends. And now I do. I'm like, I've never had this many friends, you know, like how cool. Like, you are right. I did say that last night. I'm like, how cool is this that like, I get to teach you guys about real estate. We get to throw axes, drink beer, and like have fun, meet new people. Like, sign me up. This is my dream job I have always wanted. I know I can talk. I know I can educate, you know, and I know I can have fun.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so true. Like, I even, everybody that's listening should take this down of like, we all need to make money. That's our goal, right? We need to make money to live. We need to be happy. Why not help the people that you can see, right? Why are we giving all of our money to these faceless companies?
Yeah.
It's, I hate bringing back insurance, but that's all I can refer to when it comes to these relationship things of, I'll be talking to people on the phone. I'm like, oh, do you want to like come down and grab these things? Or like, you know, you can come in and sign this thing and, or I can bring it out to you. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, I can come down? Like, I get to meet you? I'm like, well, yeah, what do you mean? Of course you can. And then they had been with Geico for 15 years and they just thought it was a computer thing.
Right.
They're like, so can you show me like where I can update my billing? No, just tell it to me. I'll update it for you.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like that. The other part of supporting all the people that do business with us is, you know, I just posted on Facebook, John and I, which is my cousin, he is the other owner of Ballinger Insurance along with Uncle Mike. Those are the two owners. We went and got lunch at a place that we do insurance, Rizzoni's Pizza in Meridian. And, you know, we asked him if we could take a picture up front. We posted on our Facebook. And it was just so crazy to see, like, how many of my Facebook friends had eaten there. And, yeah, like, it's dual promotion, right? And it's a feel-good thing of, hey, I want to let you guys know, as the owners of the pizza company, that I want everybody to go try your place. You know, I'm also doing your insurance. And then to see that, oh, all my friends are like, what a great place to eat. I've already been there. Their salad bar is amazing. And then all the people that didn't know that I insured that place that are my Facebook friends are like, oh, Carter's like insuring big places. Like,
yeah.
Oh.
It's maybe like the reputation behind, yeah, you too.
There's nothing bad about it, right?
Right.
So that's why we have that rule of thumb. It's a rule. It's non-negotiable. We're always going to do it.
And it's free advertisement. Like, yeah. It's free advertisement for you and it's free advertisement for the companies that you insure, because if they're not in business, then they're not going to be getting insurance from you. So you want them to be in business.
Of course.
Because you want them to be your business.
Yeah.
You know, all right. We probably could talk all day. How do people get a hold of you and connect with you for Ballinger Insurance?
So, I mean, my social medias are private. You can add me on Facebook, just Carter Ballinger. I'll accept you if you don't look like a scammer. And all of my business contact information is on BallingerInsurance.com.
Perfect.
Easiest way is just Google us. We're really findable. And, you know, you go to the contact section, you can find my little picture and just click my name. I'm really the, other than John and Mike, the owners, I am the go-to for outbound stuff. So if you want to promote something, reach out to me. If you feel like, you know, you want to do business with us, do that. Or if you want to try and sell us something, because, you know, we get telemarketers all the time. If you're local and you feel like you can help us, call me. I'm the easiest person to talk to. So
cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on and getting to talk. And, you know, like I said, got to meet you the night before and then wham, bam, like you're on the show. Like, how incredible. So that also, you know, reminds me for the listeners, if you want to get onto the show, the website is up, www.rawthoughtspodcast.com. So definitely hit that. You can send me a message on there. You can email me on there. You can find all of my Instagram and the latest episodes are on there as well. So thank you again for another week listening to another individual and telling their story. So Carter, I appreciate you coming on and
getting to— Thank you. It was fun.
Yeah.
I hope you had fun. Hopefully
you'll
have me back.
This is honestly, awesome. This is probably one of my favorite ones.
Oh, you say that to everybody.
I don't actually. No. Rylan knows I do not tell that to everybody. And my parents know I do not tell that about everybody. I'm like, oh, that show's going to suck. And then it like does good. But I really appreciate you asking me questions. Like, that doesn't happen very often, actually. So I do appreciate that. And give a little insight about me more than that. So listeners, thank you again for showing up for another week and helping support me. Like I said, there's so much love. There's so much passion. This is really in the infancy stage of what is going to be coming on in life. I'm you know, 8 months into it, 37 weeks, and I can't wait to see what it's like next year. So make sure that you like and subscribe. When you subscribe, it will alert you when new podcasts air, which is every Wednesday. And I will see you next week for another episode. Bye, guys. Thank you for tuning into the show today. Your feedback is very important to me. If you could leave a review, as well as follow me on Instagram at rawthoughts.podcast and email in at m.rawthoughts@gmail.com if you have any guest suggestions.